Hi, everybody. Good afternoon. My name is Bill. I'm an alcoholic. Thanks, everybody, for joining us in this packed house for the 12-step call workshop. Would everyone like to join me in a moment of silence, followed by the Serenity Prayer to start us off? God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and wisdom to know the difference. Okay, this is from the bylaws of the AA Central Office of Salt Lake City. Our statement of purpose: the purpose of the Central Office is to provide the basic services listed to include but not limited to carry the AA message and help those individuals who suffer from alcoholism, to maintain a 24-hour 12-step phone service, to answer phone inquiries as needed, to compile, update, and print meeting lists, to maintain AA-approved literature for sale to members and the public, and to print and distribute a newsletter. Specifically excluded shall be the operation of any club, clubhouse, or drying out place and acts in the violation of the 12 traditions of AA. And in 1951, Bill W. wrote, "Our 12-step, carrying the message, is the basic service that the AA Fellowship gives. This is our principal aim and the main reason for our existence. Therefore, AA is more than a set of principles. It is a society for alcoholics in action. We must carry the message, else we ourselves can wither, and those who haven't been given the truth may die." From the AA Service Manual. Okay, and our purpose this afternoon, there's actually a couple of goals. We talked about the Central Office Board. We wanted to put together a workshop, and there were a couple of goals that came to mind. We want to give everyone that has not had the experience a good image of what the after-hour phones commitment looks like. Kind of a rough idea of what a 12-step call from the phones might look like, and then to answer any questions that someone new who wants to get involved might have. And then ultimately, we hope to grow in effectiveness in sharing our experiences with each other and doing the work of Alcoholics Anonymous. We've got a couple of handouts or flyers that I brought for anyone. There's one that's kind of a list of tips on making 12-step calls, and then the pamphlet from World Services called Information on Alcoholics Anonymous, what AA does and what AA does not do. So if you don't have those, grab those. And kind of how things are going to go, we're going to have a panel of four members of Alcoholics Anonymous. They're going to share their experience with us on doing this work, and then we're going to take a break. There's some coffee and some snacks in the other room here. And in the back, there is a basket with pens and designer notepads for you to write down. If anybody, while everybody's sharing, please write down any questions that you have or any experiences that you have had in doing this stuff. There are no experts in doing this. And then after we come back from the break, we're going to read those questions and then maybe address those to the panelists. Or if anybody has experiences they'd like to share, we're taping this workshop so that we can have this available for anybody that wants to get involved in doing this work. So please participate that way. Okay, and I've got a little bit of reading here. I didn't realize how much reading I had. A lot of times, and this is based on my experience, a lot of times the caller will just be looking for the time and location of an AA meeting in Salt Lake. A good number of times, a call will be the first contact with AA that people looking for help for their drinking problem have. Sometimes, the call will be someone that has been to AA and wants to get back in touch. And then sometimes we get calls from people that have been sent to AA by the court system. Sometimes we'll get calls from discouraged family members trying to seek help for their out-of-control husband, wife, son, daughter, etc. Every call can be different. And because we cannot be affiliated with any university or college or professional telecommunications firm, we don't have any professors of the 12-step work or communication experts to get up here and instruct us in a class on how to take a 12-step call or how to answer our phones. What we do have seems to be most effective in Alcoholics Anonymous is that through sharing our experience, strength, and hope with each other, we can be uniquely useful to others suffering from alcoholism. And I've always felt in AA, I've been to some of the conferences and retreats, panels of various members of AA seems to be a really effective way in addressing certain topics. And so being the person I was asked to do this, I get to choose the people that are on the panel. And I'm not always going to be the one doing this, so whoever does this next, maybe we can do this in 6 more months or in a year and continue to do this. We can get various people from all over the valley to come up and be on a panel. But I chose 4 people that I have been watching for several years that have been really active in doing this stuff. A veritable pantheon of AA icons here in Salt Lake. No, I'm just kidding. A lot of them are my very good friends, and seriously, they are people that have been about doing this stuff and working with alcoholics. They make a difference in AA. But anyways, they're going to share a little their experience in both answering the central office after-hours phones and then also going out on 12-step calls, not only just from those phones, but also just 12-step calls in general. What we'll do is have each panelist share for about 10, 15 minutes, and then, like I said, we'll take a break. And while they're sharing, please write down any questions or discussion topics you have. And, man, that's enough reading. So that brings us to our panel. And our first panelist is going to be Andrew. And there's a big groan. Sorry. And this is out of Chapter 7, Working with Others, page 98. It says, it is not the matter of giving that is in question, but when and how to give. That often makes the difference between failure and success. The minute we put our work on a service plane, the alcoholic commences to rely upon our assistance rather than upon God. He clamors for this or that, claiming he cannot master alcohol until his material needs are cared for. Nonsense. Some of us have taken very hard knocks to learn this truth. Job or no job, wife or no wife, we simply do not stop drinking so long as we place dependence upon other people ahead of dependence on God. Burn the idea into the consciousness of every man that he can get well regardless of anyone. The only condition is that he trust in God and clean house. With that, I'll turn our time over to Andrew.
Man, threw me under the bus. I was sitting back there thinking, someone must know they're going first. And it's not me. My name's Andrew. I'm an alcoholic. It's good to be here today. It's good to be sober. And, you know, I guess the reason I'm here is to share my experience with answering the AA hotline, forwarding the calls from central office after hours, my experience with that and my experience with actually going on 12-step calls. And I have had a lot of experience. I've probably had a lot more experience with the phones than actual 12-step calls. I have volunteered to answer that hotline pretty regularly for a lot of years now. And I've made some mistakes. And maybe, you know, I didn't really know what I was going to talk about when I came here today. And didn't brainstorm too hard my experience like maybe I should have, but I you know, I think I've definitely been helpful taking that hotline, and I think I've made some mistakes taking that hotline. And for me, I think it's been through experience where I've learned how to be the most useful when I do answer that phone, and to know a lot. Bill talked about a pamphlet, you know, what AA does and what AA does not do, and I think it's really important for me to be clear on that, you know. Maybe I should start. One thing, I used to take the phones for a group every week, well, almost every week, who we took a 24-hour shift, and some of those calls in the middle of the night, I think I've found that I was less useful than calls earlier in the evening. And I think that might be where I made some more mistakes. Another thing that I've found beneficial is I actually had a packet with a lot of information when I would take that phone. I would have numbers to the VOA and some detoxes and meeting schedules and, you know, a lot of other information in there. And one thing that I ended up putting in there that I found very helpful was a suicide hotline number, because I had some of those calls in the middle of the night. And, you know, I have experience with being depressed and suicidal, but I felt like maybe I should get those people to the help that they needed with that issue before we tried to address the drinking issue. And so I actually included that in there. And like I said, I think I've made some mistakes with that. And I think that might be one reason why I had Bill read what he read. A lot of those calls I had in the middle of the night were, I think there were a lot of drunks that were really lonely and just wanted someone to talk to. I don't know how I think they were probably a little interested in getting sober, but I don't know how willing they actually were to do that. And I remember sitting on the phone with a lady from about 3 in the morning till about 6 in the morning. And towards the end of that conversation, she was talking. And let me add another valuable resource I found. The Area's website is a very valuable resource. And my experience has been that Ogden and Provo and Orem don't have any kind of after-hours service. So I got a lot of calls from those areas in the middle of the night. And the Area's website has been very useful to me because I have a computer and the internet, and I could log on and help direct those people to meetings in their areas. And that's kind of what I had been trying. I was talking with this lady, and I think she wanted to do most of the talking. And I did most of the listening, and I tried to help her get to meetings, but they were in the lower district and they weren't in the right part of town for her. But the way that this conversation ended was about 6 in the morning, she started talking to me about how unfair it was that they wouldn't hook up DirecTV in her dad's trailer park, in her dad's trailer, and I just decided that maybe I would end that call. You know, I'd been trying pretty hard for about 3 hours to help this lady, and I was getting kind of discouraged about that point. But I think it's all been helpful to me, you know, to be of service and actually to volunteer to do that kind of work. And I've had good experiences and I've had bad experiences. There's been times when I felt really useful. There's been times when I felt like I was wasting my time. I remember we used to take them as a group, this other group that I was a part of, and we would all get together. And I remember I went on a 12-step call with my sponsor, and we showed up at this woman's house, trying to do a 12-step call. And I started to share a little bit of my experience with her, and she looked straight at me and said, "You're just an effing kid." And that was another time I didn't feel very useful, but luckily I've had experience with a good sponsorship and you know, been taught, I think, by example, you know, how to carry the message of Alcoholics Anonymous and how to, share my experience and learn about, you know, what AA does and what we do not do, you know. And I think a lot of people are really ignorant to that, are really ignorant to what AA does and what we don't do. And I think it's important for me, if I'm taking that phone, to know what we do and what we don't do. A lot of people think that we do a lot of things that that we don't do. Alcoholics Anonymous is not a taxi service. I've had a lot of experience with that, and I've always tried to be helpful to get people to meetings. But if you volunteer to take the central office phones, you're by no means, you know, responsible to pick people up and drive them around the valley. That's not, at least in my experience, you know, what my job is when I'm doing that. But I've tried to help people get to meetings. If I know people that are going to meetings, I'll call them and ask them if they could, you know, maybe pick someone up and take them with them. Or if I'm going to a meeting, I'll pick them up and take them with me. But a lot of people call and they act like that's our job. I need to get to a meeting and I need you to come pick me up. And you know, whenever I can be helpful, you know, I try to. But the way I understand it, you know, that's not my responsibility. I'm kind of I think, you know, for me, the best experience I've ever had with volunteering you know, to answer the phones and do that is it promotes a lot of unity. And if there's people, central office reps in here tonight, I think at least all the groups I belong to, they do that. They volunteer to take those phones. And I think one of the biggest benefits they receive from that is it promotes a lot of unity to get together as a group. And even if we're maybe not doing so much on the phones, because a lot of times they don't ring, and a lot of times it's just someone wanting help, you know, directions to a meeting and times to a meeting. And I'll be straight up with you. Those are my favorite calls. I love those ones, you know. I need a meeting in this part of the valley around this time, man. I love those calls. You know, I seem to be pretty effective at that. I can handle those ones pretty well. But hanging out with, you know, with people from my home group or groups that I go to, and just dragging new guys with me to do that. It's been an awesome experience. 12-step work, I do a lot of 12-step work. I sponsor a lot of guys today. And I try to follow a lot of, you know, the suggestions given in this book when I do that. As far as actual 12-step calls where I show up to someone that I don't really know and try to carry the message, I'll be honest with you, I don't have a ton of experience trying to do that. But what I do have a lot of experience with is looking for the new guy at a meeting who I'm guessing is new and is alone and, you know, just trying to approach those people and share my experience with them and just be a friend to them, if nothing else. And I think in doing that, I've been blessed with the opportunity to share my experience with a lot of those people and share my experience with the 12 steps and Alcoholics Anonymous. So anyway, I hope you got something out of what I had to share, and I'm glad I'm done. So.
Thanks, Andrew. Okay, our next speaker is going to be Kimmy. And this is the very first page of Chapter 7, Working with Others. And it says, practical experience shows that nothing will so much ensure immunity from drinking as intensive work with other alcoholics. It works when other activities fail. This is our 12th suggestion. Carry this message to other alcoholics. You can help when no one else can. You can secure their confidence when others fail. Remember, they are very ill. Life will take on new meaning. To watch people recover, to see them help others, to watch loneliness vanish, to see a fellowship grow up about you, to have a host of friends. This is an experience you must not miss. We know you will not want to miss it. Frequent contact with newcomers and with each other is the bright spot of our lives. And then it says, perhaps you are not acquainted with any drinkers who want to recover. You can easily find some by asking a few doctors, ministers, priests, or hospitals. They will be only too glad to assist you. Don't start out as an evangelist or reformer. Unfortunately, a lot of prejudice exists. You will be handicapped if you arouse it. Ministers and doctors are competent, and you can learn much from them if you wish. But it happens that because of your own drinking experience, you can be uniquely useful to other alcoholics. So cooperate, never criticize. To be helpful is our only aim. And I'll turn our time over to Kimmy.
Thanks, Bill. I'm Kimmy, I'm an alcoholic. Hey, Kimmy. My sobriety date, September 8th, 1999, and my home group's Way Out. I love this part of the book. You can secure their confidence when others fail. Because my experience with Alcoholics Anonymous and answering central office phones and 12-step calling is, I remember when I was 17 years old, my second drunk was my first 12-step call. My mother 12-stepped me and took me to my first treatment center. And she's not even one of us. But my grandfather was, so she knew what to do and where to take me. And it scared her to death. So that was my first experience being 12-stepped myself. And it was funny because this morning I'm thinking back to central office phones. And I got sober in Miami, Florida. And I was down there for about a year and a half. And then I moved to Utah because you didn't drink and you were a dry county. And you didn't do Alcoholics Anonymous. And I would be safe here. And I wouldn't have to do all that stuff. And I got here and I got hooked up with a home group. And out of making amends to this woman, I got hooked up with Andrew and a bunch of people on the ICKYPA committee. And, you want to stay sober and learn how to listen, be on an ICKYPAW committee or any committee, definitely learn patience. And I was telling Andrew tonight that that was my first experience with taking the phones. I had never taken the phones before until I had a year and a half of sobriety. And we all met at, I think we were at Andrew's house at the time, and we had this big 23-inch pizza, and it was awesome, and we got, like, one call. And I think they were looking for directions, and I was like, Central phones are awesome! You know, that's all I have to do is tell, you know, look up directions and get meetings and stuff. And I just remember being taught not to say no to a legitimate AA request. And they asked me if I'd be on the central office call list. And I was like, sure, thinking, you know, it's till 10 o'clock at night. I'm fine. You know, I'll get a good night's sleep. And then in here it talks about you may lose many nights sleep. And I get that today because that phone, I think I was the only woman on that call list, because that phone would ring at 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning, like weeks in a row straight, every single night. And I was like, is this what they mean in the book about losing sleep? I'm done. And so I'd pick up that phone and I'd answer it and I'd just listen. And it was really great for me to hear these people. And then I realized that bars in Utah closed about 1 or 2 and they were calling when they got home, like the drunk dial. And I used to have that drunk dial to Alcoholics Anonymous in Miami, because when I was going in and out of trying to stay sober, I would call these people and they would listen to me. And it didn't cost me $300. That was before unlimited everything. And so I was just, it was kind of funny that it had come back 180 on me. And it was just like amazing experience. And what taking those phones has helped me do is to listen and to ask the right questions. And like Andrew said, I've made a lot of mistakes with that. You know, I've actually hung up on one woman because she was driving me nuts. And I'll get to that later. But I just remember taking these phones, and my sponsor would say, you know, ask the questions, are you in a safe place right now? Are you okay to be by yourself? You know, do I need to find another girl, another person in my home group to come over and get you? Are you safe? You know, and most of the time they were safe. I never had to leave my house. I was on the phone for hours at a time, but I never had to leave my house. And my sponsor taught me how to just share my experience with them. You know, they're like, oh, I was almost arrested tonight. I'm like, yeah, it's not fun to spend 25 days in jail. I've been there. And they're like, what? So it was just nice to kind of, you know, whatever they said, to kind of relate to them and just listen, you know, and ask them if they were ready to do something different. And it's funny because similar to what Andrew would say, and I'd be like, oh, there's a meeting tomorrow morning at 6:30 at Honey's Breakfast. You want to go? I'll meet you there. Oh, no, that's too early. Oh, there's one at noon. Oh, there's one at no, I can't do it tomorrow. Maybe the next day. And it was just kind of funny, but little did they know they were definitely helping me stay sober. And then I just, probably one of the funniest calls I've ever received was, I had about 4 years of sobriety and I picked up the phone. It was like 2 or 3 in the morning, and thank God I live with another alcoholic. He's like, who keeps calling you? And I picked up this phone and this woman was going on and on and this and that and complaining and started asking me questions, you know, how long do you have in recovery? I'm like, oh, I'm 4 years. And I was all excited. And she was like, I have 15 years. How many women do you sponsor? She started like drilling me about Alcoholics Anonymous. And she's like, I have 15 years in the program. And I don't know if this is right or not, but out of my mouth comes, why don't you call your sponsor? And she goes, my sponsor told me to call central office because she was sick of listening to me. And I was like, all I could do was laugh. And that was the girl where I had to end that call, because I'd been on the phone with her for like 2 hours. But today I look back and it's really comical, but I was not a happy camper at work the next day. Some of the stuff about actually going out and doing a 12-step call, probably my fondest memory was I had a girl that I had sponsored for a while, and she was coming up on a year of sobriety, and she was working the steps, and she was got her dream job, and she got scared. And I get that, you know, everything's going well, maybe I can drink, you know, I'm full of fear because I'm scared of not being successful and I'm scared of being successful. I get that. And I remember her calling me up, probably, I think it was a little earlier, 1 o'clock in the morning, and she's like, Kimmy, I was just laying in the middle of the street hoping a car would run me over, and these two guys picked me up and brought me back to my house. And I have the other half in the background, tell her I'm on my way, you know, I mean, just kidding around with her. And she was just like, I'm like, honey, I'm like, why do you want to cause harm to someone else? You don't want someone to hit you while you're in the middle of the street, because their life is going to be miserable after they hit you. And she's like, oh, I'm so sorry. She's like, I just don't know what to do. I can't stop drinking. And can you come over? And I'm like, are you safe tonight? Do you want me to come over tonight? She's like, well, will you come over in the morning and take me to the VOA detox? So I show up with her roommate at the time in the morning, and because I've been taught, you know, never go alone. So her roommate was there, and I called, and I went over, and she seemed okay, and she was trying to sober up. And we went down to help, like, she wants to dump out bottles, and she wanted to dump out pills, so we're trying to help her do this stuff. And she's walking around with Listerine in a wine glass. And I'm like, oh, my goodness. Thank you, God, I'm not that sick. And she was just, I mean, she was an absolute mess, but she was trying to stay sober and trying to do something different. So we're dumping out this stuff, and she's just a mess, and we get her. This was the first time I ever had the experience of having to clean somebody up and actually help her roommate, and I helped her take a shower, and we helped her get food in her, and we listened to her messages, and we were just trying to get her. And then she flipped on us. It was really, really a weird experience for me, and kind of scary for a minute, because she went from, I want to go to VOA detox, I want to do this, to I'm going to commit suicide and swinging at us and just getting really violent. And I was just like, you know, hon, what do you want to do? How can we help you? We're here to help you. And we stayed pretty patient through the whole thing. And you know, it talks in here about having to call the hospital and the police, and we wound up calling 911 on her because we were scared for her. And they showed up and they took her away. And the next morning she was a little bit better, and she wound up not staying sober that time. But I think hopefully we planted the seed. You know, I've been taught, I'm here if you want to stay sober, and hopefully I will plant the seed for if not this time, next time. And today, I mean, we actually keep in touch, and she moved away and went through some homeless incidents where we dropped her off at the homeless shelter. And you know, I'm that type of person, like Andrew was talking about, like sometimes I don't want to enable her, but I want to take care of her. You know, I want to move her into my house, and I want to feed her, and I want to help her get a job, and I want to help her go to court, and I want to pay her bills. And, you know, and I have to stop that. And I had to take a look, and I'm like, okay, I can't bring you to my house, but let's take you down to the homeless shelter, because her roommates didn't want her there anymore. And out of that experience, she happened to get really humble. She moved back home, slipped a few times, but she kept calling. And I listened, and I was there. You know, are you ready for the solution? What can we do next? You know, how can I help you from here? You can call me every day. And just the simple things that Alcoholics Anonymous has taught me, you know, when they're ready for a solution, I'm here for you. But I'm not going to babysit you. I'm not going to come over to your house, and I'm not going to hold your hair back and watch you throw up and watch you continue drinking that vodka bottle. I'll come over and help you dump it out, and then I'll hold your hair up. But I'm not there to enable you. I'm there if you want a solution. And today, you know, I was just invited to her wedding a few months ago. She's been sober almost 2 years, and she has that dream job today. And that's huge. That's awesome. Whether I was a part of it or not, it was just so nice to hear that, you know, hopefully I was one of those people that helped plant the seed for her. And she's just awesome, and she stays in touch with me. Some of the other experiences I've had, just with the phones, and like Andrew was saying, like I do my best 12-step work at meetings and at work. The management team that I work with knows I'm in recovery, so I've actually had people who've shown up drunk to work and been able to be of service there. You know, if they sent people into my office, can I talk to you? This is personal. You know, I only drink on weekends. I can't be an alcoholic. And I'm like, oh, honey, let me tell you, you don't have to drink in the morning. You don't have to drink every day. And I'd get an opportunity to do that 12-step at work, that 12-step work at work. And it's amazing because they feel like they have a confidant. I have people that come in and talk about their significant others and their other halves. And I'm just there to be available. And it's such a great feeling when somebody comes in and says, you know, I don't know what to do. My son keeps drinking and my daughter keeps drinking. And I'm like Andrew, I carry around some books and stuff. And I give him a little big book. And I said, just read the doctor's opinion and let me know if you have any questions. Maybe it'll make a little bit of sense to you. There's a great Al-Anon meeting on Tuesday nights that might help you a little bit. And I've just been given the tools by you guys and by Central Office to be able to do this. Probably the best thing, the home group that I have, when you come in, you walk around and you shake hands with everyone. So I've been able, like Andrew, to go to other meetings and look for that girl who's scared to death and go up and shake her hand. And I'm not scared to shake her hand anymore because I used to shake when I shook hands and gave my phone number out. I'm like, what am I going to give you? I've only worked the steps twice. Let me work them a few more times and maybe I can give this away. But, you know, I've been given a gift and I don't do it perfectly. But one of the things is I make myself available. And I think Bill asked some of us, because we cannot say no to a legitimate AA request, and that's what I've been taught. And this deal has absolutely given me my life back, because that phone will ring. You know, I sponsor quite a few women today. Thank you, God, for that. And they call me, and they get me out of me. And all I'm doing is passing on a simple solution that has been given to me. And I have a sponsor today that doesn't let me get away with anything. You know, I can't call her and complain, because I'm going to hear, get out your paper, you know, where's the ego, what's your part? And that helps me today, because I can pass that on to my girls. And I mean, it's this has absolutely, absolutely been a gift. I don't have, I've never been on a 12-step call from the central office phones, but I've spent a lot of hours answering the central office phones. And it's been a great experience for me. So I lose a little bit of sleep, who cares? And with those experiences and opportunities, I've been able to take that into work and be of service at work. And I've been able to take that into my home life and be of service to my family today. You know, they don't have to wait for the phone to ring to say that their child's dead. You know, I'm not dead today, and I'm an active member of that family. And I'm just grateful to have this opportunity, and I'll let the heavy hitter share. Thank you.
Thanks, Kimmy. Okay, our next panelist will be Troy, and he asked me to read. Quick paragraph here. This is on page 102, also in chapter 7. It says, your job now is to be at the place where you may be of maximum helpfulness to others. So never hesitate to go anywhere if you can be helpful. You should not hesitate to visit the most sordid spot on earth on such an errand. Keep on the firing line of life with these motives, and God will keep you unharmed. Troy.
George, an alcoholic.
Hey,
how's it going?
I'm a product of a call to central office. On June 29th, '99, I was kind of at the end of a pretty good run, and living in the maintenance shed of a golf course. Just got out of a federal halfway house, and coming off a run, and my dad had always been my trump card. So I did what I always did. I called my dad to ask him to bail me out of another situation. Called up and said, I need to get into detox. I need to get into treatment. I just need to do something about my drinking again. And what my dad said was, we've already tried all those things. What you really need to do is go find God. And I was like, oh man, I didn't want to do that. So after talking to my mom and my dad again, I put in a call to Alcoholics Anonymous. And I gave them the same pitch. I gave them the pitch, man, I need to get into detox. I need to get into treatment. I just need to do something about my drinking. And the voice on the other end of that line said, is this Troy? It ended up being a guy that sponsored me about 6 months earlier. And with a home group that answered central office phones every Tuesday night for years. It's my first experience with the central office phones. What he said was, get up here, we're answering the phones, we'll decide if you need detox, we'll decide if you need treatment. It was a group that did not read point number 3 on your handout there, the old maintain anonymity, because I don't think rolling up to someone's house does that. But hey, it worked here. It worked here so far. And so I go up there and got together with a group that was answering phones for central office. And I was greeted at the door by another member of Alcoholics Anonymous who said, what are you doing here? And I said, I'm just trying to stay sober tonight. And he said, welcome in. Come on in. That's all we're trying to do too. And that's been the deal. I don't get anything out of this deal except for staying sober. I don't chalk up points in heaven or anything else. I just get to stay sober for one more day. Andrew was talking a little bit about suicide calls. It was about, I'm trying to put a timeline to this. I know it was over a month after that, but not much more than that, because I had moved out of the maintenance shed of the golf course. I know that much. And we were answering central office phones, and it was Bill and it was another guy. It was the guy that answered the phone the first night, and there was one other person there. And one of them was on the phone. I won't tip off who it was, but they were on the phone, and he starts motioning me over. He goes, "Troy, take this call. The guy's really drunk. He won't even know we switched who answered the phone. I got to go get the pizza." So I get on the phone, and he was right. The caller didn't know we had switched, for one thing, but I'm in the middle of a suicide call, okay? At about a month of sobriety, I'm in the middle of a suicide call. It was a guy who was saying, "Oh, I'm taking another pill. It's time for me." Now, there's nothing left to do in this situation. I didn't have a packet next to me. I didn't have anything else except experience, strength, and hope. So what I said was, "You're taking pills? You don't want to do that. I just tried that a month ago, and it was a horrible, horrible result." What you might want to do, if you're really going to go through with that, is call the suicide hotline. But I'm tell you what, I'm going to be at a meeting tomorrow night. I'm going to be at this place in this location. If you have time to do that, that's where I'm going to be. That's the end of... We talk a lot about those overnight phone calls, and I'm also a member of that group who took an overnight shift about once a week. And I got a lot of calls in the middle of the night. They get a lot more unsympathetic ear than Andrew and Kimmy, who are up here when I get the call at 3 in the morning. Because I have my experience. I have my experience when I was drinking. And I also, at a couple years of sobriety, I had a brother give me a call saying, "Troy, I'm just like you. I'm absolutely just like you." And I spent a couple hours talking to him in the wee hours of the morning. He said, "Can you take me to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous tomorrow?" 7 a.m. rolls around and I'm at work, and I give him a call. And I say, "So you ready to hit that meeting tonight?" And he says, "What meeting?" "Oh, yeah, Troy, I did call you last night. That's right. But you know how it is." And I said, "You know, I do know how it is. I do know how it is." So every call that comes in like that at 3 a.m. from then on out, what I said is my experience. And my experience is, if you drink anything like the way I drink, anything we do right here is just going to be a shadowy recollection in the morning. It says that in the big book. Don't deal with him when he's very drunk. Okay? It's just going to be a shadowy recollection in the morning. Here's what I am going to do. I'm going to give you my phone number. I want you to write it down and repeat it to me so I know you got it, and then give me a call back tomorrow. That's what I do from then on out. There's been crazy, crazy phone calls on the overnight shift. There was one, I only spent about 10 minutes on it, but it was a dispute in a nursing home. The only people that could get to answer the phone was Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm on the phone for 10 minutes, and then I think, what came out of my mouth was, "I'm having a hard time seeing what this has to do with alcoholism, so I'm going to let y'all go." There's some crazy calls that come in on that overnight shift. It's an absolutely wonderful deal. I've got to go on dozens and dozens of 12-step calls. I can remember one. It was probably my first year or two of sobriety, and I was attending AA on a regular basis. I was also working two jobs and going to school at the same time. So I can't remember if it was after a school shift or after my second work shift of the day. I go by the house where everyone's answering phones. And I'm driving just a perfect car for 12-step work at that time. It was a forest green and rust-colored 1980s Bronco, I believe. And I roll up to this house, and I didn't even get inside before someone else was thrown in that car. And I was told, "Troy, you're going on a 12-step call. It's right here. Here's the address. Here's the guy that's going to go with you." And off we went. Okay. I got to one of those old hooker motels down on State Street. And we knocked on the door. The door opens, and we asked the guy inside, "So you want to quit drinking then?" And he goes, "Well, I don't know." Now, ordinarily, that would be the end of a 12-step call for me. But the guy I was with was still in that reformer an evangelistic stage. And thank God he was, because we got in there and this guy's trying to talk that guy into going into treatment and all these other options. And the workbook was coming out. Numbers were being laid on him. And I got to smell one of those old motel rooms full of spilled beer, full of piss in chlorinated sheets. And I got to spend some time going into motel rooms like that and waking up in the morning with those smells and just absolute disgust of myself. And I got to look at that and think, you know, this guy's me. This guy's absolutely me. Did that guy ever get to get sober? Absolutely not. But it was a real gift for myself. I'm a member of a different fellowship. We had a meeting this morning. It's a bunch of goofballs who attach sails to surfboards, and we try to scoot across Utah lakes and pretend we're out on the ocean. And a couple of years ago, one of the other members of that fellowship came up to me and he said, "Troy, we really need your help for Rookie Day this year." And I said, "Rookie Day?" And he says, "Yeah. It's the one day a year these were the exact words that came out of his mouth. It's the one day a year we give to the new guy. And then our conscience is clear for the whole year." And I thought, wouldn't that be nice? But the truth is, further on in the old chapter, Working with Others, it says a kindly act once in a while isn't enough. You have to act the Good Samaritan every day. If need be, it may be the mean the loss of many nights' sleep, great interference with your pleasures, interruptions to your business. It may mean sharing your money, your home, counseling frantic wives and relatives, innumerable trips to police courts, sanitariums, hospitals, jails, and asylums. Your telephone may jangle at any time of the day or night. Your wife may sometimes say she is neglected. A drunk may smash the furniture in your home or burn a mattress. It goes on, it goes on, it goes on. And why do we do this? Why do I do this? In the words of Dr. Bob Smith, 1, sense of duty. 2, because it's a pleasure. Somehow the smell of piss mixed with chlorine and spilled beer, just, it lights my fire. It just does. Because in doing so, I'm paying my debt to the man who took time to pass it on to me. And because every time I do it, I take out a little more insurance for myself against a possible slip. Thank you all for answering the phones when I called in, and thanks for my life.
Okay, how's everybody doing? AC is pretty nice, isn't it? Everybody's staying cool enough? Okay. Our final panelist will be Christy. I'm going to read this for really quick. This is on page 91 out of Working with Others. It says, "See your man alone if possible. At first, engage in general conversation. After a while, turn the talk to some phase of drinking. Tell him enough about your drinking habits, symptoms, and experiences to encourage him to speak of himself. If he wishes to talk, let him do so. You will thus get a better idea of how you ought to proceed. If he is not communicative, give him a sketch of your drinking career up to the time you quit, but say nothing for the moment of how that was accomplished. If he is in a serious mood, dwell on the troubles liquor has caused you, being careful not to moralize or lecture. If his mood is light, tell him humorous stories of your escapades. Get him to tell some of his." I'll turn the time over to Christy.
Hi, y'all. I'm Christy. I'm an alcoholic. And, man, there's so many stories. I listen to these guys, and I have all these stories in my head. Central Office has been a big part of my sobriety. And it was this Central Office. I was still drinking. I was a drunk. And, my mom lived here, and she was sober, and she knew some of y'all because she was sober. And I had visited her a couple of times, and I had met her. I met y'all, some of y'all, and knew you by your first names and not by your last. And what happened was she had gone out of the country. She and my stepfather had gone to Chile or something, and they were... My brother got in this horrible accident. He fell from a tall building and landed on his head. My poor mother. He likes some substances as well as I did. And she was out of the country. So I find out he's in horrible condition. He's split open his head. I go to Atlanta. I'm there in the best shape I can possibly be. You know, I'm a drunk. I'm here to help, you know, and my brother's out cold now, you know, I mean, he's got some serious things wrong with him, and the guy's, my brother's boss, was at the hospital a lot, I think, because he was concerned, and about what was going on with Ricky, and I would go to the hospital every day and sit there all day long, and the doctors would come and tell me how bad Ricky was, and I'd be like, I know. And then the guy would say, well, I'll take you out, the boss would say, I'll take you out to dinner, and I'd say, and I'll have a couple beers, you know, and then I would get drunk at night and then go back to the hospital and stay at the hospital all day. And this doctor kept coming out and telling me, your brother's in really bad shape. And I'm like, I know. He doesn't look good. And he said, have you had any luck getting in touch with your mother? I said, oh, no, she'll surface. You know, I've got this whole casual attitude about the whole thing. You know, oh, no, she'll surface. She's out of the country, and she'll come back, and she'll call me. It'll be okay. And the doctor finally looks at me in my eyes, and he says, no, I don't think you understand. Your brother might not make it, and you need to find your mother now. It's like, really? You know, like, reality was not a good thing for me at the end of my drinking, you know? And so I started thinking, well, how am I going to find her? You know, I don't know any of those people's last names, you know, but I knew that she was involved in Alcoholics Anonymous. I knew she had a lot of friends, because every time I came to visit her, I met y'all, and then y'all took me to meetings, and it was all very boring to me, and I thought that y'all were all pretty freaky. And so the only thing I knew to do, I get back to the hotel room, and I pick up the phone, and I call Central Office. You know, I call, and I get Ron on the phone from Central Office, and I say, I won't be able to look at Ron because then I'll cry. So hide your face, Ron. No. So I call, and Ron answers the phone, and I go, look, my name's Christy, and my mother's a sober alcoholic in Salt Lake, and I know you can't tell me you know her because of the whole anonymous thing, but her name is Betty Halverson, and she's got some friends. I know one's name is Meg, and there's a Bill, and there was a Denise. I had met a couple of times these people, you know, when I came to town, and he did not let on that he knew any of those people. You know, he kept it all anonymous, and he was very supportive to me, although I was pretty pissy on the phone. You know, I was not a nice person. And within an hour, there was a member of Alcoholics Anonymous that called me at the hospital, you know, I mean, at the hotel where I was staying, and said, what's going on? What's wrong? And so I told her. This woman called me every hour after that. And then they went and broke into my mom's house, and they tried to track her down in Chile and did all that stuff. And, you know, the whole point is that I watched the unity that Alcoholics Anonymous had prior to my coming into Alcoholics Anonymous. When it was my time to come into Alcoholics Anonymous, I knew where to go. You know, I feel like... I don't know what's wrong with my throat. I knew where to go when I came here, and that provided a wonderful service. But Central Office, throughout my sobriety, has played that kind of part in my sobriety. I was about 3 years sober when I moved here, and I was looking around for meetings and looking around for ways to get connected, you know, in Alcoholics Anonymous, and it was before having the phones was a regular thing. So our home group, I'm going to grab that thing so I don't feel like So y'all, so I was floundering and I was trying to find my way around here in Salt Lake City, being a sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, and I wasn't really getting into service and I was staying sober, but I hadn't found my way. I could hide out a lot here because y'all didn't know me. Y'all didn't see me before I came in, you know, except for Ron and heard me. But I got tied up with this group and I was looking for a way to get to fit in with this group and find my way in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I was the central office rep. I had volunteered to do that. And we were looking for people to answer the phones. And I thought, this is it. I'll go to my group and we'll answer phones, you know. That has saved my life. Saved my life, I'll tell you, you know, because at first it was a social thing for me. You know, I needed to find my hook in Alcoholics Anonymous. I couldn't find my hook in Alcoholics Anonymous. But we started getting together every Tuesday and answering these phones. And it was about a meal to me. I was like, what are we going to cook? You know, what are we going to have, you know, for our central office phones? And it was all about the social event. I could care less about what we were there to do. And as a matter of fact, I was petrified of the phones. I was petrified that I was going to actually have to talk to a drunk that needed help because I had no idea how to do that. But I started watching people at these regular Tuesday night gatherings do that, you know, answer the phone and hear the things that they said. And so then when I was closest to the phone, I didn't go run the other way when it rang. Instead, you know, I tried to muster up enough courage. I think that the things that I feared about answering the central office phones was, A, I was going to say something wrong, you know, that was going to send them out drinking more or something. No human power could relieve my alcoholism, right? So there's nothing that I can say. There's nothing wrong that I can do, really, in the overall scheme of things. There's nothing that I can do. And I think that everybody that's talked so far, you know, we've all had different experiences with answering phones. I've stayed on the phones way too long with people that I don't need to be on the phone with because of what Troy said. I was a drunk like that, and I know that I didn't remember Jack the next day. Nothing. So when I'm on the phone with a drunk, I'm thinking, how... They're not going to remember this at all. I could tell them, go to the Buddhist temple, and they'll say, okay. You know, I mean, there's nothing that I can say when they're drunk. And now, today, I don't have a problem with that. You know, I mean, I can say, aw, baby girl, call me in the morning. We'll talk in the morning, you know, or take him to a meeting. So I'm not fearful of any of that stuff. What happened the other day, there's so many stories, and I can't tell you how many of them are swimming around in my head right now. I was at the house when Troy shows up on the deck. It was the house that I lived in, you know, and I fed him soup, and I watched him, I watched him sober up, and then I've been able to watch him this whole time, you know. Bill, at a meeting, you know, we had an open house, you know, and we still do. Come, bring your sick and twisted. We love them. You know, that's how it was where I sobered up. Just come on, you know, you just sit. You know, just sit. It's going to be all right. We'll feed you soup. We'll tell you some funny stories, and it's going to be all right, you know. So our group had the phones at the park the other day, kind of full circle deal. We were at the park. We decided as a group that we didn't want to sit at the house. We went to Liberty Park, so everybody's sitting around Liberty Park answering the phones. And there were a couple of girls on the that had answered a call that came in, and they were afraid of saying the wrong thing, you know. And, you know, there's by the book. Those pamphlets are the best things in the world. If you get to, I mean, please read them. I read them every now and then and go, oh, yeah. alcoholism. That's it. That's all I have experience with. That's my story. You know, from beginning to end, that's all I know is alcoholism, what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. You come and you do this, and we'll be fine. but so the phone rings, and it's this lady's brother. The brother's in California, and he's calling about his sister here in Salt Lake City. He's like, she's really drunk. She needs somebody to go and not at that moment. She's really in pain. She needs somebody to go and see her. Well, we need her to call us. And what it turned out is this guy is a sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous in California, right? We're all family all over the United States. Wherever we go, we can go to Alcoholics Anonymous. We can find a meeting. It's the same thing that happened for me when I called Ron. When I was still a drunk, this guy calls us and says, man, my sister, she's just dying. Can somebody just call her or go there? And so somebody's rule is that, no, the alcoholic must make the phone call themselves. Really? Really? You know, I don't know what the rule is, but I could pick up the phone and call the girl, you know, and find out what's going on. Well, she decides she wants to go to a meeting. So I went and picked her up, and you're not supposed to go by yourself. I went by myself. But you're not supposed to, so I want y'all to know that. Don't go by yourself. And I go and I get this girl. She is no bigger than a minute, I promise you. It took her probably a thimble full of alcohol, and she was, yee! I mean, it was this big. And I took her to a meeting. She's shaking. I got her on the front row of our home group, you know, introduced her to everybody, you know, and say, baby, you got a home here if you want to, you know, besides your legacy, you've got a brother that's sober, so we'll take extra good care of you. And anyway, the girl ends up, I go to pick her up for the next Monday meeting. I had talked to her all week long, and I went to go pick her up at this new job she got, and she's nowhere to be found, so I call the house, and the boyfriend says she got picked up at Dan's grocery store because she stole a bottle of vanilla, and she was down in it, and he was like, I am so done, and I can't even find that girl after that. You know, I have no idea what happened to that girl. You know, this is not a success story, obviously. But what was a success story is that there's a sober member in California who could call us and say, man, could you look after one of mine? You know, and we said yes. And we showed up and we did that, you know. So, I don't know. Ta-da. That's it.
Okay. It is. Yeah, it's on the hour. Thanks, Christy, Troy, Andrew, and Kimmy for coming and spending your time with us. We're going to take a quick 10-minute break and just stretch our legs. There's some snacks and some coffee in this room. Please be careful with your coffee. We just had the carpets cleaned, I guess, and then we'll come back. And anyone that has any questions or any experiences you would like to share, there's a basket with scrap paper. Please write those down, and we'll go over those when we come back. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Bill. I'm an alcoholic. It's harder to regather than it is to gather in the first place. My sobriety date is May 4th of 2003, and my home group is an AA group. A couple of you are members of that group as well. And a couple things I wanted to do really quick, just to get it on our recording. One of the most useful tools I found when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous and started answering these phones was this pamphlet called Information on Alcoholics Anonymous. It's on the World Services website. It's here at Central Office. I think Ron told me he has 500 copies of these. We've got them up front here. When I would answer the phones, and some of our panelists were talking about not knowing what to say or what to do, I would just basically stand with the phone in my hand and I would read right off of this pamphlet. And I got to the point where I almost memorized a lot of the stuff. And it's funny, I used that just kind of as my little outline before I had any personal experience. But over time of doing that and doing this work, I found that these things are actually my experience. This helps in those things. And I thought really quick to, it might be a good idea to read this. There are two sections on this flyer, and it says, there's a section that says, what does AA do? And then it says, what AA does not do? And I'm just going to read that really quick. And if any of you would like this, again, we've got copies up here. Under the topic, what does AA do? One, AA members share their experience with anyone seeking help with a drinking problem. They give person-to-person service or sponsorship to the alcoholic coming to AA from any source. Two, the AA program set forth in our 12 steps offers the alcoholic a way to develop a satisfying life without alcohol. And then three, this program is discussed at AA group meetings. And I'm going to skip down. What AA does not do. AA does not, one, furnish initial motivation for alcoholics to recover. Two, solicit members. Three, engage in or sponsor research. Four, keep attendance records or case histories. That was very valuable. A lot of calls for attendance records. Five, join councils of social agencies. Six, follow up or try to control its members. That's a good one. Seven, make medical or psychological diagnoses or prognoses. Eight, provide drying out or nursing services, hospitalization, drugs, or any medical or psychiatric treatment. Nine, offer religious services. Ten, engage in education about alcohol. 11, provide housing, food, clothing, jobs, money, or any other welfare or social services. 12, provide domestic or vocational counseling. 13, accept any money for its services or any contributions from non-AA sources. And last, 14, provide letters of reference to parole boards, lawyers, court officials, social agencies, employers, etc. And there's a lot of controversy about these things in AA and, I guess, out of AA. And I've always found that really reliable when someone asks me a question on those things. So we've got all of those up here. And for anybody that wants to get involved. So what we're going to do now, we've got a few questions here. We're going to see if we can do our best to maybe answer those by sharing our experience. This anonymous person, question one, how do you get people to commit and volunteers? How do you get people to commit and volunteers? One of those items on that group, we do not solicit our members, AA members, and how we get people to volunteer, as far as I can see, is through desperation. I mean, when I rolled up in, when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, I really didn't know what was going on. All I knew is that I could not live that way and I couldn't drink. And I showed up at this meeting that was branded a Nazi big book meeting. It wasn't true, but that's what it was branded everywhere I went. And they stressed sponsorship, and I got a sponsor in that meeting, and that guy suggested, if I'm as sick as he was, that I might want to do this stuff. I might want to volunteer when they need help, when they're asking for people to be of service in Alcoholics Anonymous, to stand up and offer to be of service and volunteer for things like this. And he said, our job in AA is to help other alcoholics. That's what we do here. And that's as far as I know. I mean, everybody's heard of the AA Railroad, and I went around and I asked these four guys to, or these four people to be our panelists, and like Kimmy said, I know they couldn't say no. So I know there's good sponsorship is existing in their lives. Does anyone else want to address that question? Joe?
Hi, I'm Joe. I'm
an alcoholic. Hi, Joe.
I got into service work because I had a sponsor who helped me see what the people in AA do for each other. We help keep each other sober by one alcoholic talking to another. And a service work is some way to do that. If that is a way of giving back, if that's a way of doing it, then that's why I volunteer. And it's because I want to be a part of something that's a lot bigger than me. And I want to give back to the community that gave me the gift of joy. So so freely. That's why I do service work. And nobody can guilt me into volunteering. I mean, if they do, I won't do it because I'm stubborn that way. But I think that, you know, giving somebody this, the insight of seeing what that does for other people, it gets me out of myself. I don't have to sit in my own shit stuff. And I can get out of my troubles now and listen to somebody else. My sponsor said, talk to another alcoholic, ask them how they are, and then shut up and listen to them. And that will get you out of yourself. Anything to help you get out of what I'm doing. Because I'm a crazy person, and I don't want to be alone with myself. So that's my answer.
All right, thanks, Joe. Will this reach back there? Probably not. Okay. Next question. Anybody that would like to share, would like to ask if you'd come up and share, just so we can get it on tape. Here's another question. This is a good one. What do you say when they ask for a ride? This is what I do. I'm not an expert. I've just done it. It seems to be. I have a copy of the UTA bus schedule for the Valley. I do. Seriously. I printed it out, and I give them the schedule for the area, and I've gotten calls. That's what I do now. Okay, let's go back to when I first started doing it. I would go pick them up. I would give rides wherever. I remember going out several, probably a dozen times out to England, trucking school, and picking up people and taking them to meetings. I could share a lot of horror stories about doing that. I'll just share one. I was with this friend of mine, and we went and picked out. We were superheroes in AA, we thought, so we went out and drove out to this hotel, picked this lady up, and she was still drinking. She had a 44 ounce of whiskey with her, and she got in the car and spilled it all over my truck, and we got in a big argument, and she started telling us, you guys aren't alcoholics. You guys look like missionaries. You guys are too young to be alcoholics. And we kicked her out of the vehicle, and I remember my buddy arguing with her on the street. And then somehow she got back in the vehicle, and we took her to a meeting, and we dropped her off. And I don't know that we did anything good for her. I mean, last I saw her, she was in the lobby of Fellowship Hall talking to somebody. And we asked her, are you okay? She goes, I'm fine. You know, I mean, that's what I say, and it's become more the life that I live, and I have family members now are involved in my time. When I'm not useful to someone by giving them a ride, sometimes it seems like I'm taking away that desperation that I had. I mean, when I came here, I was willing to ride 17 miles up a hill to my sponsor's house to meet and go through this, and when I'm picking them up, it seems like that I steal a little bit of that from him. So that's my experience. Anybody else? Troy? You've given a few rides. Would you like to address that question a little bit?
Oh, I just want to. Oh, I still give rides.
Okay. Anybody else? There's a couple of new guys or guys in our home group that pick up guys regularly for our home group meetings. We go out and pick up people that want to go to the meeting. And it's, I would rather be, I think some Joe was talking about, I would rather be with someone else than myself alone. Crazy. So, here's another question. What's the difference between 12-stepping and giving someone a ride to a meeting?
Maybe one is working from the book and the other is driving.
I think.
Now, the reason why my question is, some people think giving somebody a ride is a version of 12-step. I'm 12-stepping this person because I'm giving them a ride to a meeting. Mm-hmm. And some people's interpretation is doing 12-step. Do other people think that's true or not? Do you consider that part of 12-stepping people rights? Or you know what I'm saying? When you give somebody a ride to a meeting,
I'm
gonna call. Is that not considered 12-step or not?
I don't think there's a right or wrong on that. I mean, I think giving a ride can be, if someone does not have a way to, or a means to get to a meeting and I have nothing to do, if I'm just sitting around thinking to myself, giving someone a ride and sharing my experience, strength, and hope with them.
I'm sure people call that towards them.
You like to share with us?
Yeah, I've been an alcoholic.
Ben.
It seems to me that, like, for me, what got me in AA really, or at least pointed me in the direction of AA, was a really small comment by somebody that probably had no intention of exactly what they were doing. And I think a lot of what we talk about when we say this is that we don't even know what we're doing. We don't. You know, we make mistakes. We do it because we have experience. And you never know what piece of experience is going to make a difference. And I've talked to too many people who had experiences that had more impact on them than certainly the person giving the advice or the help had any intention of doing. So whether or not picking someone up to us is 12-stepping, we never know what it is for someone else.
Yeah.
So I think that's kind of like, how do you distinguish? We don't know.
That's the best answer I can think of. Aaron, would you like
My opinion on that, and that is just my interpretation, is a ride would be helping facilitate 12-step work. It would be making 12-step work possible. Just like sending out coffee or pamphlets or whatever at a meeting, chairs, we're making good 12-step work possible. But I think if we look at really at the letter of the 12th step, where it says, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we try to carry this message to others, which is our 12th step. But at least from my era coming into AA, that's the way I got it. And what is this message we carry to others? The message is that I have had personal awakening, personal change in characteristics sufficient to recover from alcoholism. So I've had that change as the result of the steps. What steps? The ones that just preceded it. But the other, I think, to me, and to some people, is just facilitating. Sometimes it's very important. This is important. This is facilitating 12-step work.
Yeah.
So that it is not 12-step work.
Thanks, Byron.
Thanks,
Byron. Okay. Anybody else like to address that question? Okay. Move on to the next one. Here's one. Where can I get a list of places to call when a drunk wants to get into detox immediately? There is a packet if you want to answer the phones, if you want to volunteer. There's a packet that Camille has, our 12-step call or our phone coordinator, that has a list of those, and or the phone book. I use the phone book a lot, so that would be an answer. What do you do with someone on the phone whose problem is drugs and the only hotline they've been able to reach is ours? My experience has been I know people that go to different fellowships and are active in other fellowships, so I refer them to those people. I give them those numbers, but I try to educate them that there are different fellowships. Alcoholics Anonymous is for alcoholics; these other for addicts or Al-Anon or whatever. We try to work together with those fellowships, but it's not all the same disease. That's my experience. Anybody else that has had experience answering the phones? Maybe Ron, would you like to share on that? I'll bet you've had a lot of calls on that.
Yes. We do have put out in the packet, like the telephone answering packet, there's a referral thing. And we try and list all of the organizations like NA, Cocaine Anonymous, etc., that have a phone number. The other thing is, like, I know there are organizations like CMA, Crystal Meth Anonymous, that don't have a phone. But I know there are meetings over a fellowship hall. And so I give them a fellowship hall phone number and stuff so that they've got a connection. Or at least know where some meetings are. And I also do the thing where, like NA, CA, etc., all of those are recordings, and I tell them, you know, your recordings kind of thing. But there, you can find out that there's a meeting, so you don't have to do it on your own.
Yeah,
and while I got the floor, the thing on ride, we get a lot of calls from people that, that want a taxi service. Can I have a ride? And I need to pick up my laundry. That kind of thing. And we also get calls from out of town people that need a friendly face, or on 12-step calls. Sometimes that first meeting is extremely scary. And if you're talking to somebody and you establish a rapport, you can say, hey, I go to this meeting, and you tell them where the meeting is, and I'll meet you there. And just that reaching out makes it so it's less scary. The other thing is, if I get an out-of-town visitor and stuff, I tell them, if you make it to a meeting and you say, hey, I'm Joe Blow from Denver, and I need a ride back to the hotel. It's like you can almost always get a ride back, but that initial ride of getting there, that's really hard for us to provide. So it's just like, get there, somebody will help you out there. You're not going to be alone. But, you know, somebody, if you can do it by bus or taxi cab or whatever, if you get someplace, then you're
going to
be okay.
All right, thanks, Ron.
I would also suggest going to an open meeting. You know, if you, you know, Alcoholics Anonymous is much more available than meetings, at least as far as my knowledge. And but going to an open meeting is appropriate.
Okay, we're... I'm going to ask one last question. This is pretty easy, or this question says, what was your worst experience answering the phones? I guess I'll just answer that. My worst experience, I was about 90 days sober, and our group was answering the phones, and I thought I'd take this one on my own, and I went over to this guy's place. He lived about 5 blocks away from Fellowship Hall. The guy was a Vietnam veteran, and I don't know what I was doing there. I talked to the guy, and he was drunk. I mean, he was slammed, and I just remember getting him into the car, and he wanted to arm wrestle me, and I said, well, let's wait until we get to Fellowship Hall, and I took him to Fellowship Hall. I ended up arm wrestling the guy. And then the guy, well, there was a few arm wrestling matches during the meeting. That's all I want to say. And the guy ended up insulting my manhood when we were there at Fellowship Hall for about 4 hours, I think. And when I dropped him off, he asked me if I wanted to come in and have a drink. That was my worst experience answering the phones. You want to share yours, Andrew?
I'm the one who asked that question.
You
wanted to hear some others.
You wanted to see if yours was worse than. we're out of time. I'm just going to share really quick. I've had the opportunity in answering the phones with our home group. It was the 10-step group, now an AA group, and I know there's a bunch of groups that are now volunteering answering these phones. I went on 3 12-step calls to the hospital, St. Mark's Hospital. They had a nursing staff there that would call in AA, and they have people at the end stages of alcoholism. They're in the bed, and they're dying. Their body is shutting down. Their liver's going out. Their heart's, you know, everything is breaking down, and it's guaranteed they're going to die shortly. So they call AA because they have heard. I can't remember if the lady was, one of the nurses was a member of AA or something, or had a relative, but they had heard that 1 in 1,000 or 1 in 1,000,000, there will be a spiritual experience that will come as a result of a couple of people from AA showing up and talking to them. And I had the experience of going to the hospital on 3 different occasions, talking to someone that was in the bed, dying from alcoholism, and in all 3 occasions, the person was telling us, oh, AA, yeah. You know, when they'd come to, you know, consciousness, they would say, I went there once. But, you know, I'm not like you people. You know, I didn't relate to AA, you know, and they're dying from alcoholism. And I guess in closing, my that is alcoholism that I have. It tells me I don't have it, you know, and it's going to kill me. These people are, you know, 45, 50 years old, you know, or excuse me, 55, 60 years old. They're dying. You know, they don't recognize their family. But it's still, even on their deathbed, it's saying, you don't have alcoholism, you know, and it's killing us. So anyways, thanks everyone for coming and sharing. Thanks again to our panelists. Thanks you guys for coming down and sharing. It's getting warm in here. And I hope we did something good. Again, this is going to be recorded. We're going to, anybody wants a recording, we're going to burn some CDs. I'll make sure we have some for anybody that wants them. I know there are people that are not here that wanted to be here that will get copies. Flyers again up here. If you have any questions that we didn't answer, write them down. And next time we do this workshop, we'll see if we can answer them. And I'm going to read Promise on page 100, which I think we read once already, but I'm going to read it again. Out of Working with Others, it says, both you and the new man must walk day by day in the path of spiritual progress. If you persist, remarkable things will happen. When we look back, we realize that the things which came to us when we put ourselves in God's hands were better than anything we could have planned. Follow the dictates of a higher power, and you will presently live in a new and wonderful world, no matter what your present circumstances. And would everybody like to join me? We'll close in the responsibility statement, followed by the Lord's Prayer.